Thank you for joining us at Cultivating Hearts. We are still in Philippians, Philippians 2, 11 through 18.
12 through 18.
12 through 18, that was close. I thought I even have it written down. That's sad, isn't it?
No, it's okay.
So we're in the studio and Grant's back with us. Yay,
Grant. Hello, everybody.
And he brought friends. He brought Adam and Christina.
Hi.
Hello.
Miss Tara, myself, Sandy. So, Miss Tara, what are we going to do today?
Oh, my goodness. I was thinking this morning. Do you realize we've been doing this for 6 months now? The book of Philippians, and we're only at 2:12, and it's been 6 months that we've been studying it.
There's a lot in it.
I know, and every time I think I'm not going to have enough material. I say that every time. God's grace somehow is sufficient in giving us what we're going to say. Paul, at this point, I want to give some background. We were looking at Paul challenging the people to have the attitude of Jesus. In Philippians 2:5, he says, have the mind of Christ or the attitude of Jesus, to literally let that be who we are. And in that, that's humility. And we talked about a truly humble person as a person that's going to know both their strength and their weakness. Today, what we're going to find is that Paul is coming back. Now, he gave them the command, and now he's exhorting them again. He's encouraging them. And if you remember last time, we talked about the fact that an actual encouragement has, in a way, a condemnation to it. It can't be encouraged if we're not being condemned, because what's happening is, if I'm telling you, you need to shine like the stars, it may mean maybe you're not. And so, you know, depending on what's in your heart will reveal whether or not you see it as an encouragement or a condemnation. So we're going to see he's exhorting them. And to catch everybody up, Philippians is Paul's experience in Acts 16 when he was with the people of Philippi, when he met Lydia and the slave demon-possessed girl and the jailer when he and Silas were in prison singing. And so those are the people that make up the people that he is trying to exhort in Philippi. So this is what the Bible tells us in Philippians 2:12-18. So then, my dear friends, just as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now even more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is working in you and enabling you both to desire and to work out his good purpose. Do everything without grumbling and arguing, so that you may be blameless and pure, children of God who are faultless in a crooked and perverted generation, among whom you shine like the stars in the world. Hold firmly to the message of life. Then I can boast in the day of Christ that I didn't run or labor for nothing, but even if I am poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifices and service of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with all of you. And in the same way, you should also be glad and rejoice with me. It's such a good word. May God honor the telling of his word. Okay, so let's go. What we've been doing in the past, before we did the book of Philippians, we would story through a passage. But now that we're it's an actual letter, we're just going verse by verse and looking at the passage and examining it. So our first verse is going to be verse 12. Grant, why don't you go ahead and read verse 12 for us before we go into it?
Okay, I have a different translation than you, so this can be a little bit different.
That's okay.
Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling.
Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you for reading. Okay. I want us to first look at, he talks to them and he says, dear friends. Why do you think he addresses them this way at this point in the letter? Why do you think he's saying that?
And mine says beloved.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like the word beloved.
I've noticed this a lot of the New Testament, that at the beginning of letters, they'll address them as brethren, my dear friends, or things like that, because it sort of lets them know that even though they might have something that could be considered condemnation or encouragement, depending on how you look at it, it sort of lets them know, hey, I'm doing this because I love you, not because I'm just you're a bad person, you need to be better.
Yeah. When somebody addresses you as friend, are you more apt to listen?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking through that somehow for me it softens it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it, okay, personal. All right, this person loves me. My person that was really excellent at that I first understood this concept was Maureen Dobkins. She was my prayer partner when I was at seminary. And she was the person that I said could put her arm around me and look at me in the eye and tell me, you're sinning.
Yeah.
And I wasn't offended by it. I was kind of like, oh, okay. Well, if Maureen sees that, then I need to deal with that kind of thing. And so that person that can do that for you. And that's what Paul is trying to do.
He's
with
doing
the people.
It in love.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly
yeah,
it.
So.
Okay. So Paul then goes in and he says, as you have always obeyed. As you have always obeyed. The question I wrote down immediately is like, do we always obey?
I was that same way. It was like, always? Ooh. I'm falling short there.
Is this like something that we have to like look at? It's like that word always kind of makes us go, wait, you know, I'm not always obedient. I'm confessing my own sin there. And so I wanted to ask, like, what does that mean? Like, is that an expectation on us that we have to always be in obedience? Well, David Guzik said, this is about the connecting the verses to what he had talked about with Jesus in the first verses up to verse 12. So verses 1 through 11, when he talks about Jesus' humility, he says we need to connect these verses and see that he's referring to how Jesus was obedient to the Father. Mm-hmm. And just as Jesus was obedient to the Father, that is what we need to have in us, is to seek that obedience. And that it's a modeling of his obedience, but it's an expectation of obedience for us as well. And but that is not an expectation to perfection. There's a difference. And so a heart that is moving towards obedience will recognize, oh man, I messed up. Okay, God, I'm sorry. Telling my parents or my colleagues or my friends, my family, I messed up. I'm sorry. I need to work on this. It is that heart towards obedience. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I have perfection. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, all right. And so the challenge to obey, he's wanting them to get it, because when they were in Philippi, when he was with them, amazing things were happening, miraculous. Remember, Paul and Silas were singing in prison, and all of a sudden, you know, the jailer and the whole household comes to know the Lord, and the people were like full of what God was doing. And we've seen that they're the ones that Paul's allowed to minister to him, whereas no other church has he allowed to do that. And so he has a really special place in encouraging them to continue that work that he's seen. But then he goes in and he says, well, what does it mean? He's like, I want you to be obedient, not just in my presence,
but my absence,
but also in my absence. What does that mean?
I think it means to carry on, you know, carry on the work that God has given each of them.
Okay. What might that look like for us?
Well, a lot of people say that, you know, you are... The person you are is who you are when nobody else is around.
Yes.
So I think it ties back to a lot of that. It's like, you can put on a show when I'm around, but the real test is going to be put, it's really going to be put to the test when I'm not here anymore. Are you still following God? Are you still obeying? Are you still doing his commandments?
It also makes me think of like when times are good versus not good. You know, it can be really hard to obey sometimes when you feel like, you know, why is God doing this to me? Why is he making me go through these things? You know, if you feel like he's absent from you. So, yeah.
Hmm. That's good. Yeah. I like what you have said because it touches on character. And I like what you have said because it touches on suffering. And if you think back to what we were looking at with humility, it was Christ's character that caused him to press through the suffering mm-hmm. to be obedient to the cross. That's our role model. And so the two of you actually just gave us an example that was a summation of what we studied the last time on the radio. And both of those are challenges, because the test of integrity happens in the closet and in suffering. That is when the test actually occurs. And how do you make sure that in presence and in absence that it can be trusted that I'm the same? And the evidence of this hits me so hard when I might, through working at the Open Door Mission, or if I have somebody coming in to talk to me and they start telling me their life story. And in the life story, I discover that the person has never really actually experienced somebody in their life with character and integrity in the closet or in suffering. So they have no role model from the set people over them that they grew up under, showing them what that might look like. So now that they're in a place of safety or a place where that security is there, they don't even know how to trust or to even have the expectation that a person is the same when they walk away. The expectation is you're going to stab me in the back, or the expectation is that you're going to go your own way. You're going to look me in the face and you're going to tell me you're going to do this, but you're actually going to do this. I cannot trust you. And so those two responses build our trust in those around us. And this is going to be important as we go through the weeks, and we're going to see why he's wanting the people of Philippi to get it. Because obviously something's gone awry. Mm-hmm. If he's having to say, hey, let you be as you were in my presence, let it be so when I'm absent. You are bigger than that, my beloved, my friend. Do you remember when you guys were little, Grant, and I would drop you off at OCA? And I would call out to you, don't forget you're awry.
No, I don't remember that.
I would do that to you guys. And my goal was, is I wanted you to remember what you would be like in front of mommy and daddy. I wanted you to be wherever you were at school. I would say that.
It's kind of like, let your light shine.
Yeah.
Because I used to tell Faith that when I drop Robert at school, remember, let your light shine.
That's
and, right. You know.
That's good.
It's hard.
Good, it is. It
especially
is
young children.
It is hard, and it's a challenge. Let's see. I wanted to make sure if I had a quote. I don't think I had a quote on that one. Essentially, what I summed it up as is that it's the doing of what both Grant and Christina have said. If I think about it, it's my word, the things I say, my deeds, the actions, the things that I do, and my attitude.
That's a big one.
The attitude. Because I actually... I want to confess my sin right here. I can have my words and my actions appear to be that I am being both the same in presence and absence,
yep.
But inside my heart attitude be so in sin.
Yep.
And so it is a progression of the word, the deed, and the attitude. And that's what he's getting at. And that's the reason why in Philippians 2:5 he said, let your minds be that of Christ, mm-hmm. or in a different translation, let your attitude be that of Jesus. Because this is the key, because my words can say one thing, my actions can say one thing, but I need to have where my integrity is so complete that literally it comes within my attitude. And so I have to have my attitude checks. Mm-hmm. Does anybody else in this room have attitude checks?
Oh, yeah.
Once a month, a week, daily. How often?
What do you mean by attitude check?
All right.
I guess that's the point.
Like, that's a really good question. All of a sudden, something's happening, and then I can tell I'm out of sync, and my tone's disrespectful or whatever. I'm grumbling. And so I'm like, my attitude's wrong. And so I do a check within myself. Okay, what do I need to do? And I start asking myself questions. When I was 21, 22, I don't remember the author. I don't remember the book. But I read a book that called it Have a Polar Bear Alert. Because the premise was is your heart's gone cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so your attitude check is your polar bear alert. Oops, something's wrong. And so, I can't even remember any principle of the book. That's just the concept I remember. And to check myself when I feel my heart has gone cold. Yeah.
And we know when it's gone cold.
Yeah.
You know, if we're honest, we know.
Yeah, but sometimes my sin just lets it.
Well, yeah. But I mean, then it's like that little conviction in your head. It's like, ooh, that was ugly.
I have to go back and I have to say I'm sorry.
Yep.
And as I've said before, Greg is my number one. My husband is my number one person that has to hear me repent more than anybody. I repent more to Greg than anybody else on this earth.
Yeah.
Then it would be Michaela and Grant.
Right.
Because they're the ones that catch it the most when I'm in sin with my attitude. Did that help?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's helping you.
Yeah. All right. What would you call your attitude check? What does it look like when you do it? And you guys be thinking, what do you do when you do an attitude check?
Well, I think I can definitely do more what you're talking about. Like, after that, be like, okay, you know, what's causing this and looking at that. But I think for me, it's, I don't have, like, any set schedule kind of thing. It's just, like, it just happens and you're like, okay, let's just be happy instead because I don't need to be getting worked up over this kind of thing or just things like that.
Okay.
Well, you're making a choice there, which is good. You're making a choice to be happy instead of grumbling or, yeah,
right?
That's good.
Yeah, mine are pretty similar. It's just like sometimes I'll think, wow, I'm not responding the right way at all to this situation. And, you know, apologize or whatever. I don't know, maybe like 1 to 3 times a week, sometimes more often, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty similar for me. At my workplace, it's all about serving people. And so I find myself getting irritated with people very quickly because they can be hard to deal with sometimes. But then I have to kind of have an attitude check and apologize and, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy, this whole process that we go through in doing this. When you actually, Grant, were a baby, I was attending a women's Bible study under Marge Caldwell. And Marge Caldwell, when she would laugh, Grant did his first giggle as an infant because her laugh was so amazing. And she called it her Dr. Pepper break.
Oh, that's cute.
Because the Dr. Pepper, is it 10, 12, and 2, and 4, or 10, 2, and 4, or something like that. It has like 4 numbers on the Dr. Pepper of the original bottles.
Oh.
And they would advertise on the commercials on the bottles, you know, you need to have your Dr. Pepper break. So 4 times a day, you get your pepper. And she came to the conclusion that 4 times a day, she would ask God, what's my attitude look like today? Mm-hmm. And
that
so
would be smart. 4 times
she
a day.
Used that concept that was like a big commercial thing at the time. And she would take her Dr. Pepper break, and it would be her attitude check. And she would do it often throughout the day. And so that was the way that she went about doing it. And it's kind of important that we have it in schedule morning.
Yeah, because if we don't have an attitude check, it gets worse and worse and worse until your heart is so cold.
Yeah, and I can't trust myself. I have to ask God,
yes,
am I out? Because I can honestly justify why I can do whatever I can do because I'm so self-centered. I have to ask God, reveal to me what needs to change in me. And that's when it's actually, okay, this is a sin. This is where I need to repent. I need to apologize. I need to work through it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It went fast. We only have 30 seconds left. Are you guys surprised?
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? So that show went fast. Like, whoa. So let's sum up. Paul is challenging them to get their attitudes right. He said in Philippians, let it be your mind. And he says, in my absence and in my presence, you need to be the same person. Be consistent in word, deed, and action. We're so glad you're listening to Cultivating Hearts. God bless.